it's time to go out and...
Hey, everybody, from the nightclub at the end of the world. Here we are again. It's very hot in Sebastopol, so I'll give you some clinking ice sound effects. We don't do a lot of heavy production stuff on the show, but that's ice water because I've been out working real hard on our 2 acres here. It's springtime. It's time to do work. It's time to cut grass. It's time to water, and we're just doing a lot of work, and it's, boy, it's about the only thing holding my silly head together, I'm telling you, with all of the insanity that is running absolutely stark raving nakedly amok throughout the planet today. We are facing truly the greatest number of crises all at once than at any other time in human history. And they're multiplying. They're mushrooming. They're exploding. They're mutating. As I told Gary right before we started the show tonight, story went up today. It's confirmed there's been a major explosion at a chemical factory in Yamaguchi, Japan. It's southwest of Tokyo, in a different prefecture than Fukushima. But from Fukushima Diary, which we have run in a lot of, they've just been absolutely great. And we have it up on the CollapseNet homepage now. Fukushima Diary has been solid, rock solid, and very consistent. This story came out that the complex is still on fire, and 3,379 units of radioactive waste, with 200 liters in each unit, and uranium for nuclear fuel are preserved at the site. No one has made any comment about what the condition is of that nuclear waste. We could probably guess, but we'd probably understate. Also, that's one story that's going up on the World News Desk, on the homepage of CollapseNet pretty soon. This is about India. They call it a piece of the puzzle. I call it like, duh. Quote, in the last year, the nation's power problem has grown acute, with the gap between demand and supply jumping 10.2% last month from 7.7% a year earlier. In some states like Andhra Pradesh, where Nellore is, and in neighboring Tamil Nadu, blackouts have become so common that many factories report getting more electricity from diesel generators than they do from the power grid, at a cost that is roughly 3 times higher. Now, if you've been with us on CollapseNet, you'll know that for at least 6, 7, 8 months now, I have been warning that diesel shortages will mark probably the fatal collapse of human industrial civilization. That'll be the straw that breaks the camel's back, because the Japanese are burning it, that and fuel oil. Many cities in the world are like Lagos, Nigeria. Many cities are now, the grid is so unreliable, or they never had a grid, that they're running small standalone diesel generators and even larger units, but it costs 3 times more because there ain't enough coal. Okay, so let's just go down the list here, because really what I'd like to do is just like blow everybody's gasket with how, because that's probably the only way to approach this. This is FUBAR, and we all know what that stands for. Al Jazeera had a story up this week, and we had another one that went up yesterday on the mutations coming out of the Gulf of Mexico. There's a great photo essay up that's up on CollapseNet right now. It'll break your heart. Just break. I mean, frogs with 6 legs, and it looks like pictures I saw of babies born after being exposed to depleted uranium in Iraq. Same kind of effect. But Al Jazz had a good story this week too. Shrimp with tumors on their heads. Shrimp with defects on their gills and shells missing. Shrimp without eyes, shrimp with babies still attached to them, eyeless fish, fish without eye sockets, fish without covers on their gills, fish with large pink masses hanging off their eyelids and gills, crates of blue crabs, all of which were lacking at least one claw, crabs with holes in their shells, crabs with shells that have no spikes or claws or misshapen claws, and crabs that are dying from within. And Gulf seafood is safe to eat. Everybody remember that. Go down to Louisiana, spend your hard-earned dollars, and just sit out there and eat some shrimp with tumors on their heads or some fish without eye sockets and see how that makes you feel. Every now and again, there's a piece of writing that comes along that is just so good. It's like I have to smoke a cigarette afterwards. I mean, it's like I'm just blown away. It's like, whoa. But Tyler Durden, the infamous legendary Tyler Durden, who we know has a great many people in Zero Hedge, on the 17th, put up a quote from Doug Casey. Had a great two-part article. Yes, sociopathy is running the U.S. Part 2. And I just got to read you a couple quotes before we read Dimitrion, because we have to get our heads right before we walk into this show tonight. I believe it would be clear to Machiavelli that in the U.S., virtue is vanishing and evil is on the rise. And Machiavelli would predict that things aren't going to get better at this point until they, quote, sink to their utmost state of depression, unable to descend lower, they necessarily reascend. In general, he's correct, but sometimes it takes quite a while for a society to reset. After the collapse of Rome, real civilization didn't return to the West until the Italian Renaissance, which was when Machiavelli lived. Interestingly, culture in Italy started a rapid decline in the 1490s, and the peninsula became a backwater, a quaint theme park at best, for hundreds of years. You can argue Italy is still headed downhill today. Perhaps it simply has to do with the nature of entropy, one of our favorite words. All complex systems eventually wind down. No flame can burn forever, but that's another subject. It would have been nice, though, to keep the flame of America burning for longer than turned out to be the case. He's holding nothing back, gets better. Conversely, statism and collectivism, by restricting liberty, tend to reward stupidity. Remember that political leaders are oriented toward controlling other people. They're clever about it, but they're basically stupid about the rest of reality. Nonetheless, their animal shrewdness is enough for them to gain and keep power over others. The immediate and direct consequences of that political power are gratifying for those who have it. The indirect and delayed consequences, however, are disastrous for everyone. But wait, it sounds like stupidity is related to evil, which it is. Stupidity is a signpost of evil. It's why it often takes a while when things are going badly to determine whether you're dealing with a knave or just a fool. I'd like to suggest that what really distinguishes political elites from normal people is not just a predilection for stupidity, but a real capacity for evil. Evil might best be defined as the intentional and usually gratuitous commission of acts that are cruel or unjust. A person who commits many evil acts is a sociopath. The sociopaths, who are naturally drawn to government, eventually come to dominate it. They're very dangerous people. They reset the social mores of the country they control. After a certain point, a critical mass is reached, and it's game over. I suspect we're approaching that point. That was the most satisfying thing. The whole series was great. Now, I was going to have Dimitri on a couple of weeks ago, but it was Easter, and I just zoned out and missed it. And the theme then was going to be, as I was watching the United States getting its butt kicked all over the world, which is still continuing to happen. I mean, since then we had this amazing summit of the Americas, in which 30 Latin countries just sat there and just bitch slapped Barack Obama, and he sat there and had to listen to all 30 nations say, "We don't want to do. You better bring Cuba into this. We're tired of being, clearly U.S. credibility is falling. But the question of maybe relative, is it falling faster than everybody else's around the world? I don't know. So I need help with this. So I got Dmitry Orlov on tonight. We all love Dmitry. He's a totem on the totem pole of peak oil. He's a Russian American computer engineer. He's been a friend for a long time. We published him at From the Wilderness. He wrote Reinventing Collapse. Everybody knows who he is, and you guys love him on this show. You can find Dmitry's stuff at ClubOrlov.blogspot.com, where his latest essay is, and I really enjoyed that, The Strange Logic of Dreams. There is so much surreal stuff going on. Dmitry, help me get my head around this. Are you there?
Good to be on your show again.
Thank you. Help? Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, we had started, I had started saying, it looks like the U.S. was getting ready for a really, really fast crash, perhaps like the Soviet Union. That was the thought. But as I'm watching everything around the world, I see everything else becoming utterly either nonsensical, obsolete, or ludicrous at the same time. How do we... do you see it all happening, like, universally all at once?
Well, no. I think it'll affect different places at different rates. I think a lot of it does have to do with the availability of electricity. I think that's going to be the Achilles heel of everything that we perceive as, you know, organized society, because when you deprive people of their several hours of television watching a day, that's when all hell breaks loose.
Along with their Prozac at the same time.
Well, television is much more powerful than Prozac. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, essentially people have to participate in some kind of a dream world that is shiny and pleasant looking, and even if it makes them feel bad and inadequate, it still makes them feel like they're participating. Once you cut them off from it, then they start paying attention to what's really going on, and then the political situation starts unraveling very, very fast. So everybody is in the same position as, you know, these, you know, homely women who look at fashion magazines, and it makes them look inadequate, but it doesn't stop them from buying the fashion magazine.
Right.
And so we're in the same position vis-a-vis this fake reality, this fake manufactured reality. As long as we can look at it, we're fine. We don't decompensate and go crazy. But it all depends on the availability of electricity for at least 3 hours a day, 6 to 9 p.m. Every country that I've seen in the world that has gone through this kind of crisis, like Soviet Georgia, like Bulgaria, for instance, they've all gone down to where they had like 3 hours of electricity per day. And even in places like Cambodia, where there is no grid, well, they run gen sets during the evening hours so they can listen to the radio and watch television.
I remember one of the things that you've had many concepts that always make me laugh, but I remember you describing the aha moment, which was loosely, and you can correct me on this, when people realized that the USSR was like kaput. Mixed language metaphor. Now, though, I see another aha moment, but is it relative to just one country? Is it? What would an aha moment look like if it happened to the whole species?
Well, I don't know about the whole species. I think it is happening to the United States to a very large extent. I think a lot of the lies have worn thin. And, well, one of the things that makes me think that is a couple of years ago, I got invited to participate in a Kremlin-sponsored Russian think tank, preparing for, like, a Russian political summit that was happening. And one of the things I was asked is, well, what is the state of the United States? What's the trajectory? What's the trend? And I pretty much spelled it out that, you know, the United States is finished as a world power. You know, it's a dead man walking. And they didn't believe me.
Mm-hmm.
They paid me anyway, but they didn't believe me. And they haven't called me back, so I think I'll call them back this year and say, hey, how about now?
I remember when I got asked to go to an economic conference by the Ministry of Finance in 2001. My trip to Russia is absolutely my favorite overseas trip. But the one thing that I got so clearly there was that all the Russian economists and apparatchiks, whoever I was talking to, were all very clear that the number one problem was the dominance of the U.S. dollar, was the dollar as the world's reserve currency. And I thought that was, now looking back, it's like they had this figured out a long time ago.
I think it was clear to them the entire time, because you have to understand Russia is a country whose currency got replaced by the U.S. dollar internally at one point.
That's right.
And the Russians till recently had a very high concentration of U.S. dollars hidden in various cookie jars and mattresses, which is, you know, a great windfall for the U.S. Treasury, because all they have to do is print this money and then it goes away and disappears. Velocity is zero, but they got something for it. But that's going away. That's very, very dramatically going away.
Are you seeing any competence anywhere in the world in a political, governmental, and any kind of official capacity?
well, I'm an engineer, and so I look at the things that aren't being engineered that should be. And all of these nuclear accidents waiting to happen. I mean, we have an exponential increase in power outages throughout the world that you can actually plot, okay? And that's a really bad trend, considering that every single nuclear installation goes unstable without electricity.
We had, as a matter of fact, I have in my notes for this show, power outages have risen sharply over a decade, major power disturbances in America. And it's an amazing bar graph that we got off of Facebook, but I had this. In 2009, there were roughly 100, about 125 blackouts in the country. In 2010, we go up to 175, and in 2011, we almost hit 350, and that number is growing exponentially. And like the lights, oh, horrible pun, the lights aren't going on for people.
Yeah, it's actually a terrible predicament because right now the base load is dropping around the world, To cover the gap, everybody is firing up their diesel generators.
Mm-hmm.
And so the demand for diesel is going up, but it's the same stuff that's used in transportation. So and the entire system is very much, integrated. So if you don't have the transportation network, you don't get spare parts. But if you don't have electricity, you can't order them because everything is done through the Internet.
Exactly. And
so there's no triaging diesel between the different uses of it. Once you run out, it's a pretty hard crash. And the thing is that we have all of these really unstable things, like these nuclear reprocessing facilities, nuclear power plants, et cetera, that require a stable supply of electricity that are at risk. So I used to think that, well, if we just shut everything down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shut everything off, and then think. Okay, we could come up with something better. But now I'm starting to think that, shutting it all down is just really not an option. But I don't see anybody pursuing the option that needs to be pursued, which is shut it all down very controllably, mothball everything ahead of time.
We are sneaking up on the time when, at this nightclub at the end of the world, we play a song just to remind us all that we can step back from this and have a moment. This is a new song I'm going to play for you guys tonight by Diane Patterson. We played a couple songs by her. She's just an amazing singer-songwriter and artist and all around everything. Very spiritual, sharing a lot of my spiritual views, and it looks like the world needs to be tuned up like with a tuning fork, and there may be more truth to that than we know. But this is Sacred Sound by Diane Patterson.
Planting seeds of life, growing food for insight, weaving wisdom words, sowing seeds of hope. Dance the dance that's already dancing, planting the seeds that are really worth planting. I woke up with a
Two great CDs out. You can find her at DianePatterson.org, DianePatterson. Okay, I thought that was appropriate. That gives us a conscious awareness that there is another way, a constructive way to view things, and we don't have to get caught wrestling with this madness. We're with Dmitry Orlov tonight. Before we go to a station break in a few minutes here, I put a story up on the website, Dmitry, this week. A couple days ago, CNN story, shock of shocks, there's a whole bunch of GIs, U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan strung out on heroin. It's as if CNN thinks that we don't have a memory long enough that I can't remember the guys in Vietnam in 1969, 1970, when Special Forces were guarding Vang Pao's, horrible stuff. And heroin smuggled on military aircraft, you know, this is where I came into all this stuff 35 years ago. It's Vietnam Redux. But I wrote in a comment, Dmitry, that it's not that we've come full circle. I think we're spiraling down a vortex. I think it's sicker and deeper, and the circles are turning faster now. Is a vortex a helpful construct to use when trying to grasp collapse?
Well, I think that, you know, the pain is incredible. The pain that so many people feel because, you know, first of all, they've been traumatized, and secondly, they haven't been given any chance to actually rationalize or rationally deal with what's happened to them, to make sense of their predicament. So all they feel is pain. And I walk by these, you know, drug distribution centers where I live. I know where they are because you can spot the people from pretty far away. A lot of them are the vets, you know, and a lot of them are just kind of people who, you know, sustained an injury but then weren't given medical treatment that was significant. And so they're just basically addicted to painkillers now. I know so many people here who are addicted to painkillers. And it's a whole tendency to just medicate every problem. And I think that it is a kind of vortex. After a while, you're just surrounded by people who are in pain.
And it's important to check out. We have a caller, James from Brooklyn. James, let's see if we can get you in before we have to go to station break. We'll take your question, and then we'll take a break and come back, and Dmitry can answer. Go ahead, James.
All right. Two things. One is you actually had a female vocalist a while singing Wake Me When It's Over, if you could play that again one day.
Oh, that was Lisa Mann up from in Portland. Yeah, she's my old buddy.
She was great. If you could tell us how to get that song, that would be terrific. The other thing,
Lisa Mann Music, M-A-N-N. .com, I believe it is. It's an amazing CD. She is a true pro. She's a heavyweight. She gigs all over. I've been privileged to sing the blues with her a couple times.
She's terrific. The other thing is, if you really feel like the market is going to start to, you know, take a head down, what do you feel about shorting the market?
I have said we're going to go to station break with this. Dmitry can comment. I'll give you my quote before we go to station break. About 9 months ago, I said very clearly, I think it's totally morally irresponsible to have anything to do with the markets now. I won't play. I've never played markets. I've never owned a share of stock. But now I think it's morally reprehensible to feed or play in that system. And that's my own decision.
No, I hear you loud and clear. But I'm almost 50, and I can't take the money out of my 401k, and that's the only option I really have right now.
Yeah. You know, those are tough choices that we're all going to have to face. I can tell you one thing: it's at some point here, pretty soon, your 401k isn't going to be worth toilet paper.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking about, maybe doing the opposite. You know, if the market goes down,
well,
that funk?
Yeah, but I'm not going to give you any advice on that. We all have a pretty clear idea of what's going on. It's just I don't want that energy in my life with me even, you know, giving that system the credibility of saying that I would do this or do that within that system. For me, it's kind of like endorsing the system, and I can't do it. We have to go to station break. We'll be right back with Dmitry Orlov. He can comment on that. You can call in at 1-888-874-4888. We are here at PRN.FM on the Lifeboat Hour. See you in a minute.
I'm on my meltdown. I'm on my meltdown. I'm on my meltdown. I'm on my meltdown. I'm on my meltdown.
I thought that's kind of an appropriate song. That's a new white trash song. I'm on my meltdown. We have fun with that. I'm on my meltdown. Yeah. Anyway, that was a fun song to be a part of at New White Trash. You can find us at newwhitetrash.com. We're back on the Lifeboat Hour with my good friend Dmitry Orlov. And before we get to a caller here now, we were asked by James from Brooklyn about the markets. I kind of jumped on that. Did you have anything you want to say to that?
Yeah, I'm not an investment advisor, so I can only talk about myself. And as an investor, I'm an investment advisor's worst nightmare. I'm a buy and hold investor.
Mm-hmm.
I invest in things that I think have a future and for the long term.
How logical.
Yeah. And that's the winning strategy throughout the ages. It works better than anything else. That's the reason I do it. Now, what James was proposing is gambling on credit.
Yep.
That's what shorting is.
Yep.
I don't like gambling. I don't gamble. And I don't like credit. I don't use it. I carry zero debt. So that's my example, and I can't give him any investment advice. That would actually be illegal, but I can present an example, and that's my example.
Yeah, good. I mean, and, you know, a lot of the real naive zombies say, well, look at the Dow. Well, most of us sentient beings have a long time figured out that the higher the Dow goes, the more miserable people are. That's the correlation. But also, the Dow is inflated now because of European flight capital trying to get the hell out of Spain and Italy and France and the Netherlands right now. So, you know, I don't want nothing to do with that. We do have a caller on. Martin from Brooklyn, are you there?
Hello, Dmitry. I am, while I'm listening to you, I'm building my own solar panels.
Hey.
I'm preparing for collapse. Got a comment and a question. First comment is to the caller asking about investment and his 401k. I would encourage him to just sell it all off and buy some gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is, which of the two loser presidential candidates will bring on collapse faster, or does it even matter?
Dmitry.
I think there are two breaking news headlines that should definitely be covered by the media in this election campaign. And the first breaking news headlines is the presidential race is down to a Democrat and a Republican. Okay, that's the first one. And the second one should be run after the election day, and that should be middle-aged American male retakes the White House. And that's all that anyone needs to know. Go back to sleep for another 4 years.
I mean, and the way I would look at it, I would rephrase the question. It's not whether Barack Obama or Mitt Romney would bring collapse faster. Collapse is going to happen regardless, and that's the wrong way to look at it. I can tell you that Ron Paul will be the one who helps us, who helps liberate us to prepare for it much better by just rearranging the way we spend resources and money and military and waste everything, and he will set people free. There's a, you know, we hope for a miracle with regard to Ron Paul. I mean, and I'm hoping for that because he's the only thing out there that even offers some reasonable reality-based policies. Matt from Maryland, you on?
Hi, Mike. Hi, Dimitri. I know you guys, neither of you like to speculate on time frames, but Dimitri, I found out about you from listening to Max Kaiser, and Mike, I found out about Max Kaiser from listening to you.
Hey.
And
we're sneaky that way.
I'm just curious. To me, stage one of your five-point plan of Dimitri, stage one for me has already happened. I mean, I got chickens, I got some peacocks, my wife held a baby goat, we're ready to buy some goats, milk them, so on and so forth. I know, like I said, I guess my question really is timeline. I was just curious about stage two and stage three. Not when they're going to happen, but can you just give me a little bit more insight?
Well, financial collapse is getting stretched out in time because central banks have decided to pull out all the spigots and print their way out of this. And so at some point we'll have some kind of a hyperinflationary event happening, and that will certainly change the picture. It'll make a lot of paper just immediately worthless.
I see that happening within the next few months. Go ahead, Dimitri, please.
Yeah, but it's very hard to, you know, you can't really, I mean, it's not even ethical to make a prediction like that because you're just trying to perturb the system just by saying that.
But, right. And, Mike, I've been listening to you for a long time, and I know you always kind of scoff at people on a timeline because, I mean, you know, we can't really look at it as a timeline. We know what's happening. But can I ask you guys one other question? I know you guys are both not financial guys, but what do you think about silver?
Well, I've been a big fan of precious metals for a long time, and period, full stop.
Okay.
As long as you own it, as long as it's in your possession, as long as it's not a piece of paper or a share of stock or a deposit slip for somebody else's vault in some other country.
Okay. Well, you guys answer my question. Hey, you guys are doing a great job, and I thank you. Every Sunday night, I got a breakout after dinner. I come out to the garage, got to listen to Lifeboat Hour. You guys, great job.
Thank you very much. I have one friend who has to lock himself in his closet so his wife doesn't know he's listening to the show.
Oh, no, my wife, we hate to call it collapse here. We have 10 acres. We're here right near Washington, D.C. But we're doing all the right stuff. Big garden, like I said, chickens, kind of what you
How's
say.
How's your water?
I'm sorry?
How's your water? Where is your water coming from?
I got a well that's close to 300 feet deep, and it's funny. I actually had to. We had a couple bad years of gardening, and I had a plumber come over. We have a water softener, and actually we had to bypass the water softener because we were basically salting the plants. It's going to be really great this year. I'm excited.
Okay.
We've got lots of perennials and berries. We got wine berries.
This is a busy time, man. This is the time when it's really good. We have some more callers, Matt. Where are you in Maryland?
I'm sorry?
Where are you in Maryland?
I'm in Burtonsville. I'm about 10 miles north of Washington, D.C.
Okay. I was born at Georgetown Hospital, so I know the area really well.
Great. Hey, Michael, Dimitri, you guys are doing a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Richard from California, are you there?
How you doing, Mike?
All right. Where are you?
I'm in Santa Clarita, right out of Los Angeles.
I know it well. Okay, what's your question, man? Go ahead.
Well, I just, it's more of a comment. I was wondering if you ever heard of because of water here in California, and I have a garden, is that I looked at two things on the internet. One of them is called Keyhole Garden, which they use in Africa a lot. It helps with droughts. I don't want to explain it, take too long, but people need to Google that. And the other one is an old German way of gardening. It's called, I may say this wrong, Hugin culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you bury a bunch of logs and trees and you make a big mound over the top of it. And those logs, they collect a lot of the moisture. When the roots of your plants get down to it, after about 3 years of this, you hardly even need to water it. It just takes care of itself. So
yeah,
it's just something they may want to look at.
We have a horseshoe bed here on my 2.5 acres, and we're just getting ready to start putting the starter plants in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, that's good stuff, and that's the important stuff to be focusing on now for more than one reason, not just because it'll keep you fed, but because it keeps you sane.
Yeah, and I think probably one of the most important things I've heard out was in the Prophet of Doom was, I think it was Kunstler said that once you get into understanding what's going on and you start gardening and you're getting back to nature, you find out that that's what you should have been doing all along.
That's,
you know,
right.
It's not. And so I just want to thank you guys. Orloff, I read your blog, and both of them are great, and thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Actually, I know something about Hugenkultur, is the way it's pronounced in German. One bit of advice on that is the wood has to be really rotten. It has to be falling apart, because if you bury it too early, it'll actually steal nitrogen from the soil. You'll end up using more chemical fertilizer to get something to grow on there. That's something to pay attention to. Otherwise, it's a great idea.
Yeah, there's all kinds of great stuff that that you can use, and you really get into it. And for me, there's an enormous amount of joy in just watching things work like they're supposed to. Sorry. Yeah, the caller brought up something good. The title of your current essay is The Strange Logic of Dreams. I read that, and that was really brilliant. It was almost to me like people trying to communicate across three different space-time dimensions or states of consciousness. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about that essay. What were you thinking about with that?
Sure. I'm just getting into the lies. Most people, they see somebody lying to them, and they just don't like it, right? They reject the entire message. But we live in a world that is dominated by certain kinds of lies. And so I'm trying to get into the actual fabric of these lies and how the mechanism works of making these lies stick. And I think I've discovered a concept. It's kind of like a 1-2-3 punch that knocks somebody out. You don't just lie once. You lie three times in a row. You say three contradictory things.
Mm-hmm.
And first time it's like, wait a minute, you're lying. Second time it's, wait a minute, you're lying, but you're lying differently. And third time, you're kind of knocked out, because most people can only hold two contradictory notions in their head at the same time. we have this kind of binary way of thinking, you know, yes or no. If this thing is right, then this thing is wrong, and vice versa. So you throw a third one in, and you just knock somebody out. They stop being able to think, and then you get penetration. So with all of these supposedly insoluble problems, like, you know, Arab-Israeli conflict or healthcare in this country or, you know, you name it, we have this 1-2-3 combination of lies that is being used to basically stop the process of sorting it out in its tracks.
Now, you
to stop people from thinking.
Well, okay. So we stop people from thinking. I was going to ask you to plug this event with Carolyn. We'll do that in a second. And once you have paralyzed them, kind of like a cow, bovine, then what? They are manipulable. They are pliable.
Yeah, you can tell them what to do. At that point, it's like, I don't know what's going on. I'm confused. What do I do? And then you tell them what to do,
and they will do it.
Yes.
Well, there's a growing mass of human beings around the world who are very wise to all this now, and I see this awakening really occurring at a very rapid pace, and I'll be talking about that more on other shows. You're going to be at a big event soon, and I just saw it pass through my desk, with Carolyn Baker and John Michael Greer. And what is that? Where is that? And when is that? And how can people find out about it?
Well, there's a website. Four Corners, If you Google for that, you'll find it.
Four quarters?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a really nice center, and there's camping, there's going to be music and dancing and dinners. And it's very inexpensive because at the center they grow a lot of their own food.
Where is this geographically? What city or what?
Oh, it's in Pennsylvania. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's a long drive from Baltimore.
Okay. It's called Four Corners?
Yeah.
And what's the title of the event? And do we have a date? I have to go back to get, I have an email from Carolyn. I was just running through this before the show. I want to make sure we talk about this, though.
Yeah, it's on my blog. The link to it is on my blog. It's very affordable for families, and anybody in the area should definitely think about driving up there and with the entire family, because it's going to be a, you know, kind of like a big shindig. Not like a formal conference or anything like that.
Okay.
There's also going to be a lot of kind of roundtable, go around the room kinds of discussions. It's not going to be lectures. It's really going to be a lot more hands-on, and we're just bringing together a lot of people who have something useful to contribute.
I have the information in front of me. It's four quarters.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I was saying corners. It's an interfaith sanctuary. It's called the event is called The Age of Limits. Dedicated to the pioneering work of Donella Meadows, Jorgen Randers, and Dennis Meadows, in their 1972 report, the ethical report, Limits to Growth. This is May 25 through May 28. The website is ageoflimits.org. Dimitri will be there. John Michael Greer, Carolyn Baker will be there. A lot of heavyweights there. So, if you've never had a chance to see Dimitri speak live, it's a really good thing. And
thank you, Mike.
So, what else are you doing lately? Are you in demand?
Not hugely. I've been doing a lot of studying. I haven't had a chance to do that in a while, so I've been doing that. I've been doing a lot of reading and just thinking things through. I might actually end up having a fairly relaxed summer where I get to do some sailing, which I haven't been able to do in a couple of years. That would be great.
I'm kind of feeling here. Next week I'm having no guests because I got to do a big catch-up with my peeps. We're everybody who's a CollapseNet member, and I do have to talk about CollapseNet here. Pay attention to the yellow bar at the top of the web page. I'm putting a lot of stuff in there that has to do with quantum physics and a lot of very interesting scientific hard things that are taking place, and stuff that makes a whole lot more sense than anything we see in the world right now. So next week I'm doing all of that. For CollapseNet, I have to do this again. Last week we passed the station break, and I gave a very impassioned plea for funds because CollapseNet's hurting real bad. I don't know if I can pay the rent on the first, but that's the least of our problems. One of our key members who's been with us from the start has been diagnosed with a terminal disease, ankylosing spondylitis. We are running on fumes. And last week I said, I don't know how to price this or say what we need X number. I hate that. I just can't live that way anymore. And I just said, send us money because you love us, because that's why we do what we do at CollapseNet for you. And boy, we're just knocking them dead out here. And, you know, we're really useful. Give us some love back. And you know how much money came in last week? None. Not a dime. So I'm laughing at this spiritually from my standpoint, because for me, spirit is supply. And so I got to say this again, though. We really need some help. We need some memberships. We are just putting out, and everybody at CollapseNet, I mean, there's Wes and Weiss and Jenna and Rice Farmer and everybody there, they give their all so that we can stay on top of this stuff for you, and we need some help. And pardon me, Dimitri, I just needed to do that. I have to take care of my people once in a while. You were talking about that. I'm getting a very clear sense, too, that my schedule is lightening up, because things are becoming very clear for me now that the relevance of the way I work for so long is passing. And I'm getting a sense that what I need to be doing more of is to get more deeply involved in the act of living the right kind of life.
Well, yes, I'm interested in certain things that are extremely important, I think, moving forward, but nobody's paying attention to them. I think that, you know, there's going to be a huge shortage of thermal energy because of the unavailability or the high price of fossil fuels in various places. So to compensate for that, we have to come up with a lot of concentrating solar installations. And nobody's really thinking about putting them in, scaling them up. They're supposed to be a way of producing electricity. Who cares about electricity? People need to stay warm. They need hot water. And also they need small-scale manufacturing that concentrating solar can deliver. And the other thing is I've been working on it for a while, and I want to continue working on it, which is sail-based transportation. So if I invest all my time in those two things, I might actually accomplish something. And that's really what I want to do.
Yeah, and I'm getting real comfort out of that, because sometimes holding the awareness of everything that's going on in my head is enough to make me run screaming around like my hair was on fire. And I don't do that, obviously. But I think that's incredibly important for everyone out there. If you have anything that you do, if you're gardening, if you're whatever you're doing, find something that connects you with something physical and tangible, with the earth. Have the grounding experience of that, because most of the human race is about to become terribly ungrounded all at once. And that's an important thing to do. Looking back, Dimitri, I met you, we hooked up, in 2002? That's when Dale Allen Pfeiffer, God bless Dale. Do you ever hear from Dale Allen Pfeiffer?
No, he actually kind of went dark for a while. I heard from him sporadically, but he basically decided to do something very specific, which is write fiction and also concentrate on music, and not really concentrate on the big picture because he found it too disturbing. I don't think I can blame him for that.
For those of you who don't know, Dale Allen Pfeiffer was a geologist who introduced me to peak oil almost immediately after September 11th. And of course, if there are historians, they'll say, one of the best things that I did, the most significant, was that I linked peak oil to 9/11. But it was Dale Allen Pfeiffer who introduced me to Dimitri. Now, we've got like a decade that's passed since then, man.
Yeah, it's amazing. It has been a decade.
Looking back on the decade, I think we were successful. I think we may never know how successful we in the peak oil movement, that's all of us, the Simmonses, the Colin Campbells, the Heinberg, everybody. I'm having a sense that we accomplished quite a bit, but there is obviously, looking at all this happening, when people like you and me saw it coming so clearly for so long and wrote about it so clearly for so long, I find myself getting angry perhaps more than I should. That's why I'm doing a little more physical labor lately. How is that decade sitting with you?
Well, my background is, and my profession is engineering, and it revolves around getting things done. And getting the message out, I'm vibrating air, and it's hitting a few eardrums and maybe penetrating a few brains here and there. But that's about it. Mm-hmm. Now, if Earth is a spaceship, no space guard is going to pull up and declare it manifestly unsafe and pull us off. We're here and we have to do something about it and do something about it soon. And it's just not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm branching out in various directions. I'm trying to figure out how to apply myself in very specific ways where I can actually get something accomplished. But I'm also trying to understand what the problem is. Why can't we do anything? Why is there this issue with getting anything done?
Yeah, and it's kind of frustrating to watch the efficacy of anything out there in the world deteriorate faster than roadkill in the middle of the Arizona desert in July. This is an amazing journey, and personally, I'm so grateful to have met and made friends with people like you, Dimitri, and all of the people we've come to know who we can certainly go inside our heads and we can kind of all know how everybody else in the movement we work with for so long is feeling right now. And we all see this.
Well, I think that, you know, the reason to keep going and to keep doing this is we are making a lot of people out there feel sane, feel okay, whereas they otherwise wouldn't. And so that's actually an accomplishment. I think that, you know, whatever it is we think we're doing, we're actually just in community service.
That's the only way to look at it, the only way I ever have is that we do this to be of service, and I know how many millions of people we have reached around the world. I see that every day at CollapseNet. Dmitry Orlov, we're running out of time. I want to thank you for joining me again. You can find Dmitry, I really love that essay, The Strange Logic of Dreams, at cleborloff.blogspot.com. Next week, I'll be back solo. I'm going to be talking about a book called The Source Field Investigations. And if you look on the yellow bar at CollapseNet, you're going to get a hint of where we're going, because guess what? I think there might be some reason to be a little optimistic here, and there's hard science to back that up. But you have to dump everything you think about before you think about something. We'll talk about that next week. It's you and me together. Dmitry, thank you so much for being with us tonight, man.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. See you, everybody, next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.